We're late, and we only have a few minutes on.
Yeah.
It's 1 o'clock.
House Committee on Revenue will come to order for May 2nd, 2017. Colleagues, we're going to go slightly out of order today. We have four work sessions in front of us, and it looks like we have a quorum. So let's open first one I hope is the simple one, House Bill 3338 for work. Mazza? I think this is a really simple one, but you may have a different thought.
Doesn't believe in simple.
Yeah, we can make it complicated.
Please don't.
All right. So just to keep it simple, House Bill 3338, to remind you, this is the one about mandating in statutes that the Department of Ag has in writing in the gas stations the amounts of taxation for different levels, and this bill came to you from a different committee. It's already amended, and we have the revenue and fiscal statement on both of it.
Right, and remind me, who testified on this bill? Was it Representative Hurd?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, it was. Okay. And my recollection is that the main point of this bill is that the weights and measures people are out to measure the pumps at the gas station anyway, and they might as well be in charge of making sure that the tax notice is posted.
Oh, I remember this bill.
That's correct. Getting a head nod. Okay. All right. Representative Vance?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3338A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Vance moves House Bill 3338. Let me say that again. 3338A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Any objection to the motion? Seeing none, it's so ordered. And we'll ask Representative Hurd to carry if he wants to. Otherwise, we'll assign somebody else, and that will close the work session on House Bill 3338.
Yes.
Okay. We'll open the work session on House Bill 2779. Is that yours also?
Yes.
Please describe that bill to us.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2779, just to refresh your memory, this was a bill brought to you by the State Treasurer, and this was about allowing for more than one day for deposits by local governments to before they could be deposited. And then there was a couple issues down the bill about the management of different relationships with the depository institutions and the notices of different banks and depository institutions to the treasurer, and having DCBS taken away from that for efficiency and so on. And then there was a dash one amendment, and you asked the different groups at that time to go and discuss these issues to finish basically the bill and put it in a more ready format. And I think what happened is that they did, and they went and came back with the dash three amendment. So
which basically sets up a work group.
Which basically sets a work group, and the work group is going to look at those different issues and come back and report to you, the Committee on Revenue, on or just slightly before the commencement of the 2019 session.
Okay. And there's fiscal and a revenue?
Yes.
Okay, fiscal says minimal, so we don't have to send this to Ways and Means.
No, all you right. Don't. And there is no revenue impact on this. The amendments are in front of you are still the two amendments that are still needed for the bill is the dash one amendment.
Oh, the dash one, okay.
And the dash three amendment. So if you would like the treasurer and the work group that went to just report to you with the dash three. They
are they here?
They could do that.
Please.
And also ask DCBS to say a word about
that. Right, DCBS? Thank you. We're dealing with a bill that we heard quite some time ago, so you may have to refresh our recollection of some of it.
Happy to. Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, the dash one amendment.
For the record, your name is?
Oh, sorry, for the record, my name is Chelsea Brassard. I'm the policy director in the Oregon State Treasury.
Thank you.
The dash one amendment was brought to you during the public hearing, and it basically, it excludes monies collected or received by a county pursuant to an agreement with a state agency, and says that those agreements, the timing will be instead covered by the agreement.
That's the dash one.
That's the dash one.
Yes.
And the dash three amendment creates a work group relating to modernizing depositories and public funds. So we had been working on some issues and really believe that those issues that we were talking to different stakeholders about take a little bit more time, and that we would prefer to move forward with some of the what we think are timely fixes in the bill and give us some time to work out some of the more detailed issues.
Okay, and I take it, given the minimal fiscal, that the treasurer is willing to absorb the cost of the work group operation.
Yes.
All right. Yes, sir.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, I'm Rick Blackwell. I'm the policy manager at DFR, the entity within DCBS that regulates financial institutions, so the banks and credit unions that are the depositories. We have been comfortable with the bill since inception. Thankfully, the Treasurer's Office has reached out to us early. We had no concerns with either the dash one or the dash three, so just wanted to make sure that the committee knew that. So.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Vance?
Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendments to House Bill 2779, dated 2/28/17.
Thank you. Representative Vance moves the dash one amendments to House Bill 2779. Is there discussion? Objection to the motion? Seeing none, it's so ordered. Representative Vance?
Mr. Chair, I move the dash three amendments to House Bill 2779, and the date is 5/2/17.
Thank you. Representative Vance moves the dash three amendments to House Bill 2779. Discussion? Objection to the motion? Seeing none, it's so ordered. Representative Vance?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2779 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Vance moves House Bill 2779 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Objection to the motion? Seeing none, it's so ordered. Carrier, who brought this to us?
Oh. I did at the request of the Treasurer.
Thank you. Would you like to carry it?
I'd love to.
Vice Chair Smith Warner will carry the bill, and we'll close the work session on House Bill 2779. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, please.
I'd like to ask unanimous consent to reopen the prior hearing so that Representative Smith may be allowed to.
That was 3338.
That sounds
yes,
right.
We'll reopen the work session on House Bill 3338. Now your motion.
Mr. Chair, I ask unanimous consent that we may reopen the vote so that Representative Smith may vote.
Thank you. Representative Smith Warner asks unanimous consent to reopen the motion upon which we passed out this bill to the floor.
Yes.
So that the Representative Smith can vote. Any objections to that motion? Seeing none, it's so ordered. Representative Smith?
Mr. Chair, thank you for the accommodation. I'm a yes vote.
He voted aye, and with that we'll reclose the work session on House Bill 3338. Now we're down to 2779. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2774. We'll open the work session on House Bill 2774. Kyle?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2774, we do have the dash one amendment, and just as a quick refresher, the underlying bill, it's really a disclosure bill related to central assessment. There's two primary parts to it. The first is requiring the Department of Revenue to make information contained on the central assessment roll, make that information available on their website. That information is already up and on the website at this time. So there no real change there with what will be contained, but it will be a requirement in law with House Bill 2774. And then the dash one, while it does replace the contents of the measure, it really only makes one fundamental change, and that's related to the second part of the measure, and that's the requirement of Department of Revenue to include information for posting on the Oregon Transparency website related to property tax exemptions of companies that are essentially assessed. So the information that will be contained or that will go on the Transparency website will be the name of the company, the amount of assessed value that is exempt for the current property tax year, and the total estimated revenue loss and shift in the tax liability that's due to each exemption for each company. The Dash 1 amendment included recommendations from the Department of Revenue that they presented at the public hearing to specify the property tax expenditures to be listed. Those property tax expenditures listed are in the background document or in the background of the SMS. And they are, the intent is to contain, or to that list to contain by far the largest property tax exemptions that centrally assessed companies would receive, at the same time limiting the need for the Department of Revenue to go through and check to see if any of the 130 odd tax expenditures are being received or taken by a centrally assessed company. So those are listed up there in the background with the ORS citing as well. We do have the paperwork on this. There is no revenue impact, and there is a minimal fiscal with the dash one.
Okay. You had some questions, Representative Benz. Do you, yes. want to ask the department, or do you want to ask staff? Or
I'll ask staff for the moment, the department if necessary. The question to Kyle is, what is it exactly that the public would have available that it currently does not? You indicated that we already put the something on our computer system. What is that something, and what are we adding to it?
Yes, Representative Bent. So what's up there right now on the website, and what is required by law now, and or would be required by law in 2774, is the central assessment roll. And so that contains, primarily you're going to see the real market value, or it might be the Measure 5 value of the property, and the assessed value of the property. And it's a listing by each company. So you might see one company and then each of their property listings in each county. But it won't tell you necessarily the exemptions that are being received, the amount of the real market value that's removed from the roll, or in the what's going to be required in 2774 is an estimated revenue loss. So that's not available in the essential assessment roll that's up there on the website now today. So that would be the additional information that would then be on the Transparency website.
And follow up, Chair.
Yeah.
So the question is, what is the value of adding this additional information to the website? What is it? And I hate to have you try to make that judgment. How about putting it this way? When we look at the estimated revenue loss, that sends a signal that that the exemption is a loss. And I went back and looked at this and noted I've previously objected to the use of the term loss when we're talking about exemptions, since we choose to spend the money in that fashion, so it's odd to call it a loss. So I'm wondering if folks wouldn't be confused when they see this as a loss, when in point of fact it's an exemption that we up here have created. So I guess the first question is, what is the exemption? Give us, just take us through one example and show us the amount of exempt property. Not the amount, but give us a hypothetical of how this would work with one of the centrally assessed businesses that's listed on your SMS.
Yes, Representative Vance. And I should note that some of the information contained in the enterprise zones or the strategic investment program may already be available as well in different requirements to post that information. But as an example, I guess if one of the new exemptions that was put in place during the 2015 session is you have, it was the expansion of the FCC licenses tax expenditure. So you have franchise rights and satellites. So that's the one that's listed up there under 308-671. And an example in this is what you'd be able to see, or what would be posted on the Transparency website would be the name of the company that's claiming the property tax exemption, and you'd get a sense of if a company is claiming this for their franchise rights or if their FCC licenses. So you know what communication companies are claiming what exemption, and then you'd have the amount of the value that's exempt, and then an estimate of the property taxes that would be imposed on that exempt assessed value. And of course, getting to your point of loss and shift, those are, I guess, terms that are generally used at this point, and certainly are contained in the governor's tax expenditure report. But there's certainly, if I'm understanding the argument or the but-for question is this really a loss if it took this incentive to get the company to do, to build out a piece of property or to locate here in this state or something to that effect? And it wouldn't try to distinguish that. It would just say, if a company is receiving property that's exempt under one of these statutes, then you will report these figures.
And if I may, Mr. Chair, to draw a parallel between this situation, let's say, and someone who owns a house and is taking a mortgage deduction. This is an exemption, but we would call out the owner of the house, the amount of the deduction and the amount of money we didn't get as a result of the taking of that deduction. That would be a parallel calling out arrangement. In this case, it's an exemption, so they're not paying the tax because we've created the exemption, which they're taking advantage of. I'm just trying to get to the point of understanding what the value of this exercise is, and if it's to disclose to folks that which we've chosen to defer by virtue of an exemption, we ought to make sure we're really clear on describing that which we're doing. Otherwise, people are going to be misled by virtue of the disclosure, which is certainly not what we want, I'm sure. So the question I would ask is, have we been careful enough in labeling this complex area to not mislead people into thinking that this is a frittering away of the money? It might be, by the way. It might not be. But I don't want to mislead people by the wrong label. So, again, this takes me back to my longtime argument that this shouldn't be called a loss. It should be called something we chose to spend. Mm-hmm. And so thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to refresh my recollection.
Thank you. It looks to me as though your issue is with line 20 on page 1 of the Dash 1 amendment, maybe some other places too. The total estimated revenue loss and shift in tax liability due to each exemption for the current property tax year. I think I understand what shift in tax liability means, but I think you're objecting to that term loss. What could we substitute for that that would take the pejorative implication that you're concerned about away?
So, Mr. Chair, it's always thank you for indulging my thought that we need to be clear. It's always challenging to try to recraft a statute in this venue, but this, right. in this manner. So I would suggest that if we're going to do so, but I'm happy to. We would need to sit down and carefully figure out what word to use to make it and how it's disclosed, so we're not misleading folks.
So perhaps we ought to ask LC and maybe the department to help us figure out what a better way would be to describe this.
Sure.
I don't have any interest in a transparency law that actively misleads the reader on what it is that is being made transparent. And I think that's your point, isn't it? Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to bring a little context to this. First of all, I want to share with everyone, in the interest of transparency, I actually serve as an enterprise zone manager for multiple enterprise zones in Eastern Oregon. So I have a unique background and perspective. Colleagues, I'd ask you to look up there at the board, and you'll see that we have enterprise zone businesses, rural renewable energy development zone, long-term rural enterprise zones, and then we also have at the very bottom there solar project fee in lieu. Currently, the state of Oregon is bringing in nothing from any of these opportunities unless a development occurs.
Right.
Okay? So then, in order to be eligible for these developments, the state of Oregon is guaranteed from these companies a negotiated but certain amount of family wage jobs that currently by statute pay at least 150% of the family wage for a county. In addition, in order to be eligible, they also have to guarantee a certain level of investment in the counties. And then in addition to that, they have to sign what's called a first source hiring agreement. And this is really important for everyone to understand. That means they have to work with our Oregon Workforce Development Department to ensure that Oregonians have first shot at these jobs. So when I read this line of total estimated revenue loss, that is completely misleading because the state's not bringing in any revenue at all currently. Then, to talk about a shift in tax liability, I'm not sure that represents the issue fairly as well, because actually, if you think about the increase in payroll tax and addition in other forms of revenue coming to the state, it's actually a net increase. And so I think we need to step back and take a little harder look at this. And then I would just offer my personal perspective, and that is, it's this body that created these. If we want to publicly, I don't want to say shame, but if we want to publicly shame them, maybe we shouldn't even have these incentives. But to lure a business in, to offer them the program, and then say, by the way, we're going to put you on the wall of shame, to me, isn't a good economic development strategy.
Thank you very much. Kyle, this data is already publicly available to the public, isn't it, by request, or isn't it?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, please.
It's confidential, actually. When a company enters into an enterprise zone or rural renewable energy development zone or long-term rural enterprise zone, those applications are confidential.
Well, the application is, but the data, this data?
Well, the final data, that's fair.
That's what the bill is about, is the final data, I think, isn't it?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The enterprise zone, you can see there's enterprise zone reports by county that are up on the transparency website already. Strategic investment program, certainly there's pretty detailed information that's available as well.
I don't disagree with anything that Representative Smith has said. I think he's absolutely right. I think the question then is, can this bill be repaired so that it doesn't give a pejorative spin to the revealing of a piece of information like this? Representative Smith-Werner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I would just like to, I'm not sure if I'm asking or pointing out, I know that I think you raised a lot of good points, Representative, and I think my question is, a lot of the transparency concern is, indeed, are those jobs getting created, and are the number of jobs that are pledged actually being created, and is there a way that we can confirm that they are, and that they are paying the right amounts, and knowing that there's lots of privacy concerns? I think that is kind of the bigger, issue that's, I get that that's what they commit to, and I think that's a great thing, and I think that the ongoing concern is there a way for us to confirm that that's actually happening?
Yeah, so Mr. Chair, if I can answer that.
Yeah, that would be great, but recognize that's not part of this bill.
Right.
But go ahead.
Yeah, so what ends up happening in this process is these applications actually become contracts. And Business Oregon has a methodology. It's a very sophisticated methodology where on an annual basis they review what the business said they are going to do with what they have done. And in the event that they do not honor that agreement, they actually have to go back and pay back the property taxes. But I use that as an example in the case of the enterprise zone that they were relieved of. And so the state has a methodology to collect back if a company doesn't honor their agreement. And that's in coordination and cooperation with local government, which includes counties, cities, and ports.
And is the agreement public information?
The agreement?
Yeah.
The final agreement is.
Yeah. It has to be adopted by the governing body that grants the exemption, isn't it?
Yeah. What I would share with you, I would concur with Representative Benz. It's awfully hard to work through that issue in front of this committee, but could the bill be worked on?
Well, I think we'll hold it over. We have to, obviously have to hold it over, but what I'm hoping is that we can come up with an amendment that will reflect the concerns that both you and Vice Chair Benz have expressed.
And let me just share one last
Please.
Point, Mr. Chair. On the strategic investment program, That has been a very successful tool of the executive branch, and so we need to be very careful because there's many reasons why the governor, who has final say on that program, may choose to assist a company. And so the last thing I would want to do is embarrass a governor, Republican or Democrat, because they have a strategic reason why they want to assist a company in locating in Oregon.
Don't jog the governor's elbow when he or she is busy creating jobs.
Correct.
Right. Representative Bueller, please.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I don't think it's all that simple, and I do think we need more transparency specifically for that program. It's not clear to me the return on the strategic funds or the number of jobs that are being created. So we have a problem here to fix. I don't think this is the right solution, but we definitely need more transparency with regards to the return the state and the citizens of Oregon are getting out of these dollars.
Well, Representative, this relating clause might very well cover some of that, but if you'd like to add something like that to this bill, you need to get going. Because I think that the discussion we've had today basically leads us to trying to change this language where it says revenue loss and shift in tax liability on line 20. I think that's what we're talking about right now. I mean, I'd certainly entertain an amendment that went further than that if you have it, because I think the relating clause would handle it.
Yeah, let me, if I may.
Yeah, please.
Let me contemplate that, because I've been just trying to get basic information from Business Oregon about specifically the strategic funds, and have had a very difficult time getting that information. Yeah. So if I have difficulty getting that information, can you imagine the public's difficulty?
Right, exactly. It is, and for any number of reasons, it's slow going in addition to that.
Can I add
one last thought? Representative Smith.
And again, I don't have any comment on the transparency portion of it, but I want to make sure folks understand on that strategic investment program, that effectively is a forgivable loan. It's not a giveaway.
Yep.
Companies once again enter into a contract that's monitored by Business Oregon, and should the company not honor their agreement, the state has a mechanism, including security of its debt, to obtain collection.
Right. We call that a clawback. But
that is correct.
Yeah.
It's collateralized.
Yes, it is. All right. Anything else? Representative Betts.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Another question for Kyle, and it's the on the dash one, and it's on page two, lines one and two. The county assessor shall provide information upon request to the department for purposes of this subsection. What was the – is there something that's not already automatically happening that's going to impose more – cost upon the department by virtue of that language?
Representative Benz, that's specific to what the Department of Revenue does is it puts together the central assessment role and then it transfers the role. So those are the valuation of the property, and they send that to the county assessors that then compute the tax by placing the property on the actual role. So the Department of Revenue doesn't necessarily have the tax imposed figures. So that would be to have the county assessors to assist in running that estimated what now says loss and shift amounts.
I got you.
Follow up.
Yeah, please.
The question is, how much more work are we imposing upon the department by virtue of this?
Now it's Mark's turn.
There we go.
All right. I knew there was a way of getting him up here. Mark Garst for the department.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, Mark Garst with the Department of Revenue Property Tax Division. So if I could just make one note, and that is that before the discussion of this bill began, the central assessment role was not on the department's website. That just went up in the last 2 weeks. So as a part of the discussion that was happening here, we decided that we would go ahead and post it on the role. Prior to that, people would ask us for it, and we would email it to them. So, but as far as the amount of work that the department is going to have, we think that this is an absorbable impact for us. It's going to be, because of the way that we've limited it, we had some concerns the way that the base bill was written. But because of the way that we've limited it to these particular exemptions, it should be a pretty straightforward exercise to go through and say, if the company had the exemption, the value would be this. If they didn't have the exemption, the value would be that. The difference is the assessed value that's been exempted. Multiply that times the tax rate, and we'll have to have a little conversation with the counties in some cases on what that tax rate is, but we think it'll be pretty straightforward. And there are not a whole lot of these, actually.
Yeah, please.
Mm-hmm. And then on the first page of the dash one, lines 20 and 21, it says the total estimated revenue loss and shift in tax liability for each exemption. Can you tell us how you would calculate that? What, tell us, can you take us through the mechanism of how that happens?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Benz, basically it would just be the value times the rate is the loss, and then bonds will be recalculated with this property removed from the overall district that the bonds applied to, and that is the shift amount, is what effectively other taxpayers will have to pick up. And this language is taken from our tax expenditure report. And so really what this does is it breaks out that information by taxpayer, where currently it's available in the tax expenditure report as a lump sum. That's the big difference with the bill.
Okay.
And the follow-up.
Please, yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So how do you have readily available the bond amount that is a necessary part of that calculation?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Benz, I believe that we do. Yeah, we get what's called SAL data from the counties, and it's big data files with all varieties of information about various districts and what they're charging. And I believe that a part of that is the bond districts. Kyle may be able to answer that too from some of his past work. So, but we've worked with our research folks, and we do not think that this is going to be a heavy lift for us. If it did, it would be represented in the fiscal. We're not shy about telling you when we're going to spend your money.
Final question.
Please, yeah.
So is the new computer framework that we have available, but one of the reasons we're able to even talk about this with a straight face?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Benz, I wish I could say that it had something to do with that, but the core system replacement project, which is the system that's been recently and we're continuing to put into place, is for income tax. We have an ask, actually, as Representative Smith can tell you that for a similar system for our, it's called a CAMA system, which is a computer-assisted mass appraisal system for our property tax group, but that is not online yet. So this is the old technology, and honestly, a lot of this work is done in Excel right now.
Now that you ask, Representative. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can't speak for the co-chairs, but I speak with them regularly. And I think right now the Department of Revenue is doing some really good work trying to get its current system up in place. And I'm not sure that they're going to see this as a high priority at this time within their budget. As I work the budget in my subcommittee, they've given me very specific directions. So I just want you to have that as part of your calculus.
Mm-hmm. The directions come down to don't spend any money.
That would be accurate.
Right. The rest of us can predict that pretty easily without knowing the details. Other questions for Mr. Garst? Thank you. We very much appreciate it. Are we ready to close? Anything else? I would simply note that I'd ask Kyle to ask LC to see if we can use different language for that part on line 20 of page 1 of the amendment and see if we can't come up with something that reflects the issues that Representative Benz and Representative Smith have raised so that we don't give the wrong impression to people who are looking at the website about what this actually does. It would be wonderful if we could figure out a way to say, and look, all those jobs and all that other stuff that we got in return for this actual non-existent contribution, because there wouldn't be any contribution anyway if the business didn't exist. I think that's the essence of your point. Yeah. All right, thank you. And with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2774. Representative Smith Warner, do you want to talk about 2019?
Sure.
All right, so we'll open the work session on House Bill 2019. Chris. And we have legitimately 15 minutes before we need to be back. I remind you to be back on the floor, so we'll adjourn in time for people to make the man dash. I'm not sure exactly where we are and what you'd like us to do on this bill today.
I'd just kind of like to talk about where we are and then probably hold it over for a day or so.
Okay.
Do you want Chris to go first or do you want me to just...
Whatever.
I was going to say. So to review... The last time we worked this bill on April 20th, I believe. Yes. My prodigious notes indicate that it was April 20th. And as always, get a lot of good feedback on this, both from my colleagues and from commenters, and so as well as the Department of Revenue. And so I wanted to touch on a couple specific questions that were brought up and give the answers. Two of the main ones that I think were from Representative Bence, but also potentially from some other folks, were questions about because when I talk about corporate disclosure, it really has been about it as a policy conversation. You know, I talk about how tax credits are the other kind of the other side of the coin from our budgeting process, which is done very open with lots of disclosure and lots of public information. And our tax credits are not nearly as much information. So I talk about this from a way of getting more policy information. We started in 2009 when we established the six-year sunset review process, which I think is important, getting the tax expenditure report that we get from LRO. And we found, though, that even with more information, we still do not have a lot of specific information about who specifically is using what kind of tax credits and where are they geographically. Say a tax credit was designed, we believe, for rural areas. Well, is it actually being used by businesses in rural areas, or is it being used mostly in the Portland metro area, or vice versa? My primary goal in this has always been greater policy information for us to get that feedback and use. And so two of the things that were brought up in the last time we heard this were specifically how to get better policy information when the original language just asked about the total amount of business tax credits and didn't single them out. So indeed, you'll see in the dash fives page 1, line 13, has been changed to, as far as the reporting requirements, the specific type of each business tax credit the taxpayer claims, the total amount of the tax credit, and the grand total of all the tax credits the taxpayer claimed. So that is to give fuller information about specific tax credits that are being utilized. The second question was how many companies this would affect. In the earlier draft, did we have a dollar amount? I think we had the, I'm not sure we had a, it was 500 in the earlier draft. Thank you, Chris. And so I got some numbers from LRO about how many companies claim business tax credits and was told that there are about 1,000 that claim them right now. About 75 of them claim less than $500, about 100 claim less than 1,000, and about 300 claim less than 5,000. So I moved the number up to 1,000, which will bring us, you know, somewhere between 800 and 900 companies' information, which is still small relative to the overall number of corporate tax filers, but is still kind of a big number. I just wasn't comfortable moving it all the way up to 5,000, but have been, that just seemed like a very high bar for getting information. So I have had some discussions with some of my colleagues, which is part of why I want to hold it over, about whether a little back and forth about whether that making kind of giving us more targeted information so that we're not overwhelmed by this, whether that might be worthwhile. So changing the sub D on the first page about the specific tax credits that are being charged, changing the dollar amount and giving you all a sense of how many companies this is going to be. And also, we did some language clarification, thanks to Department of Revenue, where Section 1 still says, defines business tax credit as the meaning in ORS 314.752, but we took out in line 7 the language about subtractions because we really kind of wandered down a bit of a rabbit hole into, well, if you're going to do subtractions, do you really just want to do ones that are actually policy options, et cetera, et cetera. So we just took that out and just said, just clarified that it was a filer that was claiming at least $1,000 in business tax credit. There's still a little question about S-Corps and whether, after you divide them out, whether this would even affect any or many, and we don't quite have clarity on that. But again, I feel as though I really feel strongly that I continue to take feedback from both supporters and opponents of the bill and try to come up with a better product every time. So that's where we are today.
Okay. Comments, questions? How can we help Representative Smith Warner get
how
a bill?
How can you help Representative Smith Warner? That's a great question.
I think that's what you're asking.
Yes,
isn't
it is.
Yeah.
It certainly is.
I mean, I have a couple of comments.
Sure.
I don't see how this affects an S corp, but maybe I just misunderstand the bill. But I don't think it does it?
Chris, can you address that?
Sure. The specific statute, 314.752, is a statute that lists which C-corporation tax credits are applicable to S-corporations.
Ah. Okay. Among other things, one assumes.
I think it's just that.
So this bill only applies to S-corporations.
Right. It doesn't apply to other forms of businesses, partnerships. It's S-corporations and C-corporations.
And C-corporations.
Because the C-corporation refers to ORS Chapter 317, which is the C-corporation tax on
that's somewhere else
line 6.
Okay. Oh, I see. Okay. All right. Let me just say that it seems to me that this $1,000 tax credit is a de minimis amount. Given the size of most of the businesses that use these sort of things, and since I haven't seen the distribution, I'm not going to say that I want it to be a certain way or another way, but $1,000 isn't very much, and if you really want to use this information for developing policy, maybe a bigger number works.
Mm. And I'd also like to point out, because I didn't raise it again today because it wasn't a change, but I do want to point out that we also are talking a 2+ year look back. So mm-hmm. another one of the issues was mm-hmm. proprietary information. And so it specifies in here that the first report would be due in 18 and it would be for 15 taxes. So we're talking at least a 2-year look back to try to deal with the, to try to acknowledge the concern about privacy and proprietary.
The staler the information is, the less likely it's useful to a competitor.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Representative Benson and Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm still at a loss to understand the value of this disclosure. The sales, then your taxable income, I'm just at a loss. Explain to me how we are all the better for knowing this.
I mean, broadly, my idea is to give a sense of the tax credit, that of how it's being used to truly impact the, as we, hang on just a second, let me back up there. So as this morning in our joint tax committee hearing, when we were talking with Dr. Warner about the impact, that part of the you can talk about equity and you can talk about impact, and the idea that if we are trying to get a sense of companies' contributions to our revenue system overall and their fairness or lack thereof, the more information about what they are contributing and what they are claiming in credits, I think it gives us a fuller picture of the role that they are playing in the funding of our overall state system. And give some sort of, I'm just going to stop. Oh, sorry, because I can see you have another question, so I'll just stop answering that one and let you go to the next one.
Please, uh-huh.
So what I'm at a loss to understand is that there's still a why are you doing this element to this suggestion, when in point of fact the tax credit is a device we've created here, and we put them out there and we expect people to buy them because that's how we fund whatever. I almost said crazy incentive that we've decided we want to prompt around here.
Uh-huh.
But so we have created this tax credit device. We expect people to buy them.
Right.
Now, I've seen a tendency here to hope people don't, so that they, you know, evaporate without ever having been used but still served our purpose. I mean, that's another issue. But exactly why, knowing that I'm going to use a bank, has decided to use a bunch of money to do exactly what we've expected, now, how does that lend itself to, what good does that do us to now know that this bank has purchased all these tax credits? How are we the better for this?
Well,
and maybe they've driven their tax liability down to nothing.
Right.
Have created the opportunity.
I would argue that when we, in general, when we do these tax credits, the policy goal is to incentivize a certain behavior, and you are wanting a company
we are trying to incentivize behavior by providing that tax credit. And so what we are trying to find out is that behavior really happening? Is that are those the companies doing it that we really want? Are we promoting businesses in Eastern Oregon with a rural focused tax credit? Is that who's really using it, or is that not who's really using it? I mean, to me, it just continues to be trying to get fuller information about, we made a policy decision through this tax credit. Is it actually being implemented in the way that we intended it to be, or is it not?
Mr. Chair, may I follow up on that question? So, of course, I'm talking about pass-through credits. In those instances, we just want someone to buy them. Exactly. Like for transit, for example. We want people to purchase those credits.
Right.
That's why we create the device in the first place. Now, for credits that are designed to incent a certain type of behavior. Now, in that case, we should look and see how many are pass-through credits and how many are limited. Representative Marsh and I just went through a work group on how to facilitate the transfer of credits. And again, the purpose was to make sure we finance these incentives. So,
we talked about is there a way we could limit it to non-transferable pass-throughs, and honestly, I just haven't gotten there yet with that. That is kind of a significant outstanding question mark on this.
Follow up.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you have a specific non-transferable tax credit in mind that you want, that you believe is being misused, that this
I'm
is targeting?
Yeah, right. It's not a gotcha. We have a whole bunch of them. How are they working? Are we getting the policy out of them that we want to be getting?
Mr. Chair, that's why we have a review arrangement now set up every 3 years to go over exactly that.
But we still don't know who's claiming them and whether.
Yeah. Representative Smith, we've got about 1 minute.
Yeah, thank you, Chair.
No,
that's perfect. And my question, I think, is going to take away from the conversation, but I have a 101 question.
Please.
Because I'm new to this. Are C-Corps, are their tax returns public record?
No.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I didn't know. I should know.
Should they be?
Yeah, if they file with the SEC, they have to file a lot of information.
If they file with the SEC.
If they're a public corporation,
Please.
If they're a public corporation, my understanding is there's a form that's very detailed with regards to their finances that it has, essentially.
But it goes to the Securities and Exchange Commission, and it contains national data, not state data.
Uh-huh. I'll do some homework tonight. I didn't know the answer, and I didn't mean to take.
And they do report. They do report state taxes on that form, but it's a conglomerate. You add them all together.
I see.
In one bunch, we have different bills that would ask them to disaggregate that, so we would know what the taxes were they paid in Oregon, for example.
Thank you. I didn't mean to take away from the conversation.
No, it's fine. It's fine. We really do need to get to the floor. Can we do it really quick?
Sure. Well, in terms of thank you, Chair. In terms of transferable credits, what we found out is there's really only half a dozen of them, and the fate of a couple of those is up in the air right now. So we may wind up with many fewer transferable credits. But I would just offer the e-commerce zones tax credit as evidence of where it would be really useful to know what we're actually accomplishing there. Where we have e-commerce zones in a variety of places. We say we want to stimulate economic activity in particularly suffering locations, and yet when we've had testimony at Economic Development Committee, all the testimonies come from people in Portland who are using them. Is that the right place to be applying e-commerce zones? Should we be giving benefits to those folks in those locations? Right. So that's the kind of information that I think might be useful.
That would be a different topic. Paul, I need to make an announcement about tomorrow, correct? All right, tomorrow. Let me close this work session, on House Bill 2019. Tomorrow, there will be a meeting tomorrow, but it will be solely for the purpose of moving over the two bills that are for work to Thursday, so you don't need to come. I'll be here and I'll do it. The 2770 requires a little bit of additional work. 2067 has an error in the amendment that we drafted. We need a new amendment, and so we're going to hold those over until the next, until Thursday, which I will, because of the way our rules work, I have to do that at the meeting tomorrow. So no reason for anybody else to come. I'll do it tomorrow with that. Thank you all. See you on the floor. Committee's adjourned.
I think it really benefits. Yeah.